part two.
Welcome everyone to the Clear Vision podcast. Something I'd love to get into a little bit is this workers' rights element of the gig economy conversation, because we've touched on the more protected gig economy worker, which is a contractor. We're talking hundreds of dollars upwards per day. Evidently, that gives you a good standard of living. We've talked about the fact that you have to have, as I call it, the kahunas to step into a gig economy work, or basically working for yourself.
Yeah.
There's a huge association to that type of person being well educated, certainly well supported. Mm. What about people who don't have that? Doesn't matter which country you're in or which economic sector you come from in terms of your background. What about those workers who the only option is to move to a new country and become a taxi driver and therefore an Uber driver? How can we look at protecting those rights? There's a lot of debate at the moment, using Uber again as the prime example. Well, that's on the cute tit in the press. The fact that they say there is effectively a worker doesn't have rights, and governments are challenging these companies on this topic.
It poses a question, and it goes back to the example we talked about in terms of millennial expectancy of work, aspirations and time, tenure. Mm. I don't think it's healthy for us to split out gig workers being abused as it is to being employed workers being abused as well. In other words, I think we have an issue with vulnerable people being abused.
Yeah.
I think it's misdirected to just look at the Uber workers. You use Uber a lot, especially in London or the big cities that you named earlier. You travel a lot. You often get a lot of fairly well-engaged, very happy Uber drivers.
Yeah,
certainly
you
probably more happy than less happy. So the statistics are kind of going abused Uber drivers might slightly contradict what you actually experience on the ground. Having said that, you're right. There is an element to which our large companies, particularly tech firms, able to kind of hoover up this vast reservoir of freelancers, in inverted commas, without any protection for laying them off and so on. And I think, yes, there is an element of that. I do think, though, it might just be almost impossible. It's whether we're pushing against an immovable object here.
Mm.
In fact, not only immovable, but one that might be moving towards us at a great speed. I just wonder, when we see that 35% of the US workforce, this is according to entrepreneur.com.
And I had this very conversation with our American colleagues in our US office in Philadelphia about even the difference culturally between the US and the UK in the way people work.
Yeah.
When we say gig economy or working independently, even that idea of a remote worker.
Yeah.
And there's an element of gig economy to that. You're not in an office. You're not, you know, having a cup of tea and sort of viewpoint of work that we see on TV. America is so more advanced when it comes to that, which is why our ability as Clear Vision to sell into the US market using the technology of Google Hangouts and Zoom and communicating with people is so easy, because the US workers themselves are very used to talking to people who are not in the same office as them.
I agree.
And that, there's this huge influx of technology and change around us that's instantly happening. I am obsessed and fascinated by an Airbnb, by an Uber, as a company, as a technology, empowering people who didn't have the ability to generate their own income before.
Yeah.
My son sent me a text going, "Dad, I just saw my first thing on eBay." Now, how empowering is that to a 13-year-old boy? We had the conversation again last night when I was with him, with my mum. How did I earn money as a 13-year-old boy?
So paper round.
1993.
Yeah.
There was a milk round or a paper round at 13.
They were the options.
You've now got kids, and I'm under 16s, who are trading on the global economy, call it gig, because they're not working for anyone, and generating revenue for themselves, be it buying and selling. Obviously, the huge crypto boom of the last few years has brought an insane amount of money into young people's hands, and fascinating. And the knowledge they've built up to what we, compared to what we were experiencing at 13, is just fascinating.
Yeah.
That's what, for me, what the gig economy represents, is that real influx of technology.
Yeah.
Your services can be demanded anywhere in the world, and therefore it has a value. It's not what is my value in this village, which it was 60 years ago.
Yeah.
It's what is my value globally.
Yes.
And that's very empowering for people. But at the same time, it encourages entrepreneurial-based people who are therefore more risk-takers.
Mm.
It's giving them a bigger platform for success. So that's very positive. But the flip side of it is people who feel unsure about the ability to step into that available economy can possibly be taken advantage of. And that's where the gig economy and protective element steps in. It's only fair, I apologise for keep referencing them, but an Airbnb, an Uber, an intermediary is what they are.
Yeah.
They provide a wonderful software platform, which is what we do every day in our jobs, me and you, Simon. there has to be a social responsibility associated to a company that generates billions of dollars per year and its workforce. It can't be disassociated and say, well, I just run a software platform. There's five of us in a room, make sure it doesn't fall over. Help yourself. There has to be an association to revenue generation and social responsibility, be it through the tax system, be it through a system of contribution that goes back. We're all challenged constantly when you hear about the tax bills that these very famous intermediaries pay. I think that's where governments are able and should be able to step in, allowing the gig economy to keep growing and have the freedom of it, but knowing that those companies who benefit so substantially from it are able to contribute maybe in a slightly different way. Maybe that is through the taxation system. Maybe it is through workers' rights. The EU is obviously very progressive when it comes to that element of it.
Yeah.
The US is certainly not as progressive when it comes to employee rights as the EU, but also therefore has more innovation than the EU, is fair to say, when it comes to technology. Where did all those companies come from? The US. So there's that sort of contradiction between those two approaches.
I feel like the US is ahead in terms of its maturity of its market. So when we talk about over a third of the workers being involved in the gig, I agree with you that there's negative to it. I find that we have an office in the US. We do a lot of business in the US. It appears to me on surface value and slightly deeper than surface that employing people in the US is far less of a deal than it is in the European markets anyway. They are less protected. Hiring and firing is much quicker. It's very, very aggressive, particularly around sales and probably marketing in terms of employee turnover.
Yeah.
So there's some advantages that come with that maturity of the market, but there are some disadvantages. I nod to your protective measures that some of the European Union countries have in place. I do think when you research into happiness indexes overall, particularly Northern European, like the Scandinavian countries, do really well, and they're very protective. Mm. I think one of the challenges we have, and we're not going to resolve it in today's session, but as these big powerful tech firms grow in terms of their influence on our day-to-day lives and on what we spend, is actually what we're seeing a little bit of, and I almost daren't say it, but you know, you almost get little vibes of it around the kind of Brexit debate.
Mm.
They can actually abuse nations because, of course, if one, say for example, one country or one block says, right, we're going to up the rate at which we're going to tax you to do what exactly you were saying, to be more socially conscious and aware, they can sort of drag and drop their model and go, fine, well, we'll go here then, and move themselves outside of that block to abuse somebody else. So it's a sort of global-wide challenge.
And that's a real challenge of globalisation. You know, you've heard the stories about effectively Amazon, when touting their next big head office, I think it was, in the States, and were able to negotiate with a state that effectively was a bit like an auction to see who wanted Amazon's business in their state, and were able to negotiate their own tax terms in that state based upon the fact they were bringing jobs. Now, bringing jobs is great, but should a company have that power? But at the same time, we know that someone else will offer them a better deal, and therefore you are challenged by that. So globalisation is absolutely a part of why we're having this conversation about the gig economy. Technology is absolutely a part of it. Growth in the number of humans on Earth is part of it. And then they all comply together, and it's naive to just focus on one. And
I think you're missing one component. I think I thought you were going to nudge onto it, but it's automation and AI.
Yeah.
Because this is the big challenge that will affect both contingency workers, contractors, and employed staff. And already is, particularly in the developed markets. Because, again, let's take an example of a factory production that traditionally, let's take car manufacturing to move away from some of the other big examples. Traditionally, if a factory opens in X, that produces lots of jobs for the factory workers, the supply chain networks. You get a sort of peripheral growth as you get extra ports, transport links, and so on and so forth. But actually, of course, increasingly now things are automated and or run by bots in terms of how the automations are pre-programmed. A lot of administrative tasks are now being written out of the equation as software takes over from that.
Yeah.
So again, there's increasingly a responsibility for these tech firms, and to use, I think, your words from earlier, which is to give back some sort of social responsibility, a financial give back to the world. And here's the challenge again, which is rolled into the gig economy, is the concept that a lot of jobs are already now being automated and or run by AI. I'm researching at the moment for technology to help find the top talent as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
Yeah.
So that when we get those opportunities, we can find contractors for them around the world and place the best people in the roles with our support.
Mm.
Now, I'd say half of the technologies I'm looking at involve AI.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you look at the research that's gone into how AI is going to affect industries such as the legal industry, absolutely fascinating.
Yes.
You know, it's funny when you talk about AI, because the images everybody gets in their head is of, you know, 1980s big massive robots walking around.
Yeah, it's Terminator, like RoboCop, basically. Yeah.
RoboCop, Terminator, you know, you name it.
Skynet.
But it doesn't mean that. Can a robot or computer program find out which law is most applicable to this case when it's put in front of it quicker than a human? We know the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Can a robot or computer program stand in front of a juror of 12 good men and women and put across the side of the argument within a legal case? Bloody hope not.
Not yet.
Bloody hope not. So, you know, that's where we have to admit that things change. And I suppose to your point about AI, you know, driverless cars. Our CEO, Jerry Toombs, who loves a driverless car, if you ever find him, we can talk to him for hours about that. We put something in our calendars 3 years ago. We were in San Francisco, a date in our calendars where Jerry said there'd be driverless cars on the streets. And it wasn't that far away from where we are now. Mm. And we had this debate a number of years ago. We already know in California that Uber driverless car is starting. Some people, that freaks them out. Mm. But if you told a guy from the 1930s that a tube driver, you know, would almost just be there for safety reasons, that would seem insane.
Yeah.
You know, so there is inevitability about robots.
Well, this is what I'm saying, and it does play directly, and thank you for that example, because you couldn't have thought of one actually that's better in the wider context of this conversation in the gig economy. So let's look at that transition. Traditional, a taxi person, driver, who worked for taxi firm, let's call them XYZ. Mm. So you work for taxi firm XYZ, they probably paid you a little bit depending on, you know, like a bonus. So if you did lots of rides, you probably took the fares and then they gave you a proportion of that fare back. Then you had that evolved into independent taxi drivers, right?
Yeah.
They were contracted into firms, but they probably paid their own taxes. Then we had Uber, which is a large tech firm managing via the gig economy a network of freelance workers. And the next step is driverless technology.
Yeah.
Which actually you're cutting all of them out of the loop. Mm-hmm. So we can sit here and debate the highs and lows of the gig economy all we like. But in reality, if there's a driverless car, there's no one being paid for that other than the tech firm who invented it.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the point that, yes, we should be looking after our workers. Yes, I don't think anyone's challenging that there are some major loopholes in the way that particularly people at the lower end of that contingency workforce are abused.
Yeah.
But actually, perhaps the bigger challenge for us over the next 10 years is going to be, how do we get the money that's going into those driverless vehicles, those automated factories, those bots running through almost every aspect of who we're selling to right now. We sell to all businesses around the world. How do we get money back from those bigger firms into the people that are currently now can't drive the car because it's been driven by itself?
Yeah, it's that mix of social responsibility, social cushion that you sit around innovation, that allows innovation to grow whilst having that safety net there. That's, you know, I'm from the north of England, that's very much our view on the world, and one I'm still very much aligned to, actually, especially in a provocative, innovative industry that we're in, where things are changing and are changing quick. You know, 5 years ago I was in San Francisco, you go now and things are different.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose one of the sort of takeaways that we want to leave with this podcast is that's the way I'd like people to think about it. It's not a one-angled conversation.
No.
It's humans are innovative. You know, we have been for thousands of years. We cannot cushion that and move away from it. But with that innovation comes this ability to cushion the people who may fall out as the innovation grows. But then as a worker, like the black cab driver, there's two sides to it. The black cab driver is, in London, an iconic image outside of their contribution to the economy. So they all earn relatively high salaries. They all pay their own tax. They're a big net contributor of tax as a workforce. But, and this is the big but, and I've had this conversation with black cab drivers myself, you know, it's naive to say that we can't let driverless cars happen eventually, because I want my good job. The knowledge is one of the most amazing things in the world, which is the knowledge of every back street in London. But I have Waze, and it does it, so, which is a Google-owned application, and I can get around London just as quick as a black cab driver. Yeah. It's terrible. It's sad.
Well, actually, probably smarter, because yours will link into satellite technology.
Mine knows the traffic. Exactly. And with the best will in the world, a taxi driver doesn't know it. So that's the, I suppose that's the very emotional, provocative example of gig economy. But the stat you started with, actually, which is a younger person today, like my little boy who's 13, that they aren't necessarily thinking about joining a company at the end of their road and sitting there until they're 65 collecting a gold clock and clocking off at the end. They're thinking, how can I generate income for myself that provides me to explore the world? You know, there's all these social aspects that are playing into my ability to travel, earn some revenue for my life, and work through my life like that.
I think I can't wrap the conversation up without thinking about some sparks of ideas that have sort of occurred to me during the thrusts and parries of the last 20 minutes or so. And actually, I think what is becoming increasingly obvious to me is that the desperate need for global governance across nations on this issue. No one country alone, no one government alone can stand and try and look at the social responsibility for these huge tech firms. No one government can put in place a single preventative and or accelerative measure in terms of robots and AI. The only way this works is if you have the equivalent of a UN of technology, a United Nations committee where in which people can rotate leadership, in which different nations will sign up and agree to certain parameters, what their tax rates would be, what their distribution of wealth could be, how those people can be compensated when their jobs are automated out of existence. You know, and that's kind of what I'd almost like to leave as a little seed in people's minds for us to think about as we leave this conversation, is perhaps as much as it's interesting to talk about all the inner workings of these complicated and multifaceted ideas, actually the reality is the governments at the top level isn't quite there yet, and that's something that we could look to try and change over the next 5 to 10 years.
You're absolutely right. And if you just use that example of Facebook CEO being in front of all those countries around the world, and some of the naivety and downright idiocy that they thought from a technology perspective, they were so uninformed. And that's always going to be a challenge, isn't it, when technology is so fast moving.
Well, I don't know if you've raised that as an exact example, because Zuckerberg didn't turn up, did he, to the British MPs the other day. There was an executive committee, he didn't bother turning up, they're all angry. But would he have turned up if it had been a global committee, representatives from across the world, who'd have said, look, Mr. Zuckerberg, if you don't turn up with Facebook here, you're going to be hit with this global fine. You know, it's the power of the companies almost dwarfs that of the state.
It does now at the moment, particularly for the select few who are these $1 trillion. Facebook doesn't come into that yet, but there's the FANG stocks, as they're quite famously known as. With all that said, it's the light touch of regulation versus innovation, and that debate will continue for way past when we've finished doing this job and retired. There's no doubt about it that the economy of workers has changed. It's why consulting firms like Clear Vision exist and will always exist, to add innovation quickly, high impact. It's why the ClearHub offering for large institutions makes sense both economically and from a technology and benefits perspective. And it's why we're really interested to stay in this world and continue down this line.
Just one thing to finish on is taking the concept of ClearHub. In many ways, it bridges a lot of these challenges. If you're a contractor and you're placed on site, the two things that you would lack, and what we talked about, is support of a wider business network, because you feel a bit like you're by yourself, and lack of a community. So isn't it interesting how something like ClearHub, that's looking to address both of those things? So you're part of a wider community, access to a platinum level technical expert team. What we're demonstrating in real life is these blurred boundaries.
And particularly in that Atlassian DevOps world, it's so innovative, it's growing everywhere, but it's nice to feel that there's someone else who understands your position as a worker.
Agreed. Right, Paul, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening to the podcast all around the gig economy, part two. If you would like to hear some more information about Clear Vision, feel free to reach out to my team. We can be contacted on sales@clearvision-cm.com or any of the social media channels that you're hearing this on. Clear Vision are a platinum solutions partner in the Atlassian
space with great credibility, global reach, and can help you with both gig-based resourcing, so contracting across the DevOps type skill set, right through to training, support, hosting, on-site consultancy, and of course, Atlassian licensing. So thank you very much. Have a great day.